everyone. Welcome to the Blue Hoop Podcast, produced by Basketball Victoria. I'm Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer for Basketball Victoria. On the home bench, we have the High Performance Coach for Vic Metro, Mike Zeppel.
Robbie, good to be here, mate.
And on the away bench, we have the High Performance Coach for Vic Country, Justin Schuler.
How are we, boys?
Welcome, both of you guys. The goal of this podcast is to try and give coaches some extra information to help with their time coaching athletes, and also give you something to listen to as you drive around Victoria coaching all these athletes at the same time. If there's any topics you want discussed or some extra information or anything that you need to help with your coaching that we go over on the podcast, you can grab all our details from the Basketball Victoria website and make contact with us from there. Everyone will be happy to field all of your copious amounts of emails and everything that goes with that, as we probably have a rough, you know, listenership of about three
one
people.
One email a day.
So our topic this week is team selection and trials. It's a fairly timely point at this stage, given everyone's probably going through that at VJBL level. I know at the Basketball Victoria world, we've been going through that with Southern Cross Challenge trials, NITP selections for the coming year and everything that goes with it.
Yeah.
But, do you want to talk us through just your selection so far with Country, Justin, and
yeah,
how you guys went about it?
I guess ours starts with our under 12 identification more than selection at our Jamboree. And then the last 2 weeks we've had Gold Nugget Camp, which is our under 14 selection trials for Southern Cross. And then we've had our NITP and Cup trials as well, which is under 15s through the 18s. Around about 800 odd kids over that period of time. So tough to do, but the good thing from a program point of view is we feel we've left some really good athletes out, which sounds pretty mean, but we feel when we're doing that, that means our programs are going in the right direction. So hopefully an exciting year ahead.
Yeah, definitely. Mike, what about you guys with the Metro?
Yeah, we just finished our SCC selections during the school holidays, the September holidays, and those athletes will now go and prepare for the tournament in January. So NITP was selected throughout the year across two phases of selections, and those athletes have just started with term four now. So we kind of split up the selections for those two things across the year and try to stagger the starts for both of them as well.
Yeah, awesome. And you guys have obviously got a lot of Country and Metro coaches involved within the NITP program and Jamboree and everything that goes with that, Southern Cross. How do coaches go about getting involved in those sorts of things?
Best thing for us is Craig Hockley, who's based up in the Bendigo office. He does a great job to get out to people and make sure they're aware of what's going on. We had over 40 coaches on the floor over our selection trial period, which was outstanding for us. And one thing we like to do with the trial phase is bring them in early, do some PD with them, so everyone's on the same page for the selection day, understand our criteria and away we go. And it was really great to have that opportunity. We had Olympic level experience there down to your first time coach. So good mix throughout, but a great result to have that many coaches on deck.
And similar with Metro, the best way to get involved is just reach out. And it's awesome when we can get new coaches involved in our camp situations, in our camp environments, because that's where you kind of, you know, pinch a drill or two, but you also start to build that rapport with other coaches in the coaching fraternity, which I think is important, because coaching is a sharing kind of business.
Absolutely.
Like what I value as a coach might also be valuable to someone else. And I think the more we can share and build that culture of information sharing and professional development, I think that's the better way to go.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I talk about this a fair bit when I go and present coaching courses, is just steal from everyone. There are not many unique thoughts left in basketball at this stage. It's been around forever, but just go and steal what you can from whoever you can, and just build your coaching network that goes with that as well. It always makes you a better coach being able to talk basketball with other people, I think, along the way.
I think a big thing with that as well is I know all of us came through getting PD just because people opened the door, and for Basketball Victoria program, it's definitely an open door policy and anyone's welcome at any time.
Absolutely.
I think that's great. Well, given everyone's dealing with VJBL trials at the moment, it's both Country and Metro have got all their stuff done. I noticed some clubs have already finished, which is incredibly efficient by them. It's looking at some of the trials and clubs over the weekend, they've got upwards of 100 kids rolling in for one age group in particular. That's a lot of numbers to be dealing with as well. So I mean, the admin side probably goes first from that end. Most of these guys will have registered online and things like that. Some of the clubs will have got out and identified kids through their domestic program as well. Some people give out invites some people just say, hey, everyone come on in and on away you go. In terms of sort of running your own VJBL trials, what are some of the things you'd want to cover off before that initial walk in the door and, hey, here's 100 kids, you've got to try and pick four or five teams from that. What are some of the things you'd probably look at to start off with?
I guess we, you know, from a state level, have depth charts from that under 12 age group right through, and I think that'd be a great practice for clubs to embrace, is have some prior knowledge. Where do you see them sitting year in, year out? It allows you to actually identify the new kids better and see where they fit. Is there a need for that age group? I know some clubs have the policy of not recruiting over the top of what they already have, so it helps make sure there's good team balance, et cetera, et cetera. But making sure, yeah, you've got some prior knowledge, I think, is pretty valuable when you've got those sorts of numbers.
And it should really be easier, I suppose, by the time you get to the older age groups. You probably should have kids that have been in your program between 6 and 8 years. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but you almost may not need many tryouts for your older kids.
Yeah, know who's coming through the door. That's a major one. And then also know who is going to be on the floor for you as a coach as well, because you can have 100 kids come in. If you've got 3 coaches for 100 kids, it's hard to look at 33 kids each and identify all those kids. So know how many coaches you're going to need per athlete, or if you've got a ratio that you want to work to make sure that every kid is properly evaluated through that process as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's like a pre-trial meeting of some sort with your coaches, in your age group coaches would certainly help, your director of coaching, whoever that may be at your club. It may even be worth getting in some coaches just to run your trials. Just so you're not the one, I mean, if you're the head coach of that age group, you're not the one trying to evaluate and pick your own team, as well as try and make sure all the drills are running and the baskets are going and everything like that. You guys have done that sort of thing before with yours?
Yeah, like I think, well, speaking on the countryside, like definitely having a pre-trial meeting where everyone understands what we're actually looking for. You know, numbers that we're looking at is important as well, so that everyone actually really whittles it down. Something we talk to the coaches about is having their own shopping lists as well, and the things that they're just looking for in athletes. I think with what Zep said there about, you know your coaches, and maybe they have something that they're looking at in each kid, but more eyes the better, in my opinion. And one thing that I, you know, we found in this last selection period was making sure the coaches rotated. Sounds like a simple thing, you know, it was midway through that first session of trials, and the coaches are still working with the same kids. So
we did the same.
Really important. Yeah,
you got to. And we rotate baskets or keep the coach where they are and just get different kids through, because everyone's got a different take on a different kid.
Yeah.
And a kid might make 2 shots for me, and then I turn around and he goes 0 for 3 for you. Like, it's not a good evaluation. But your shopping list is interesting. Speak a little bit about that, because that's something that I think all coaches and all evaluators of talent have to have, because if you haven't got one, like, what are you actually looking at, and how does this kid actually know what they're being evaluated against?
So that for us has been probably the last 3 years now pretty consistent in 1v1 offensive ability, 1v1 defensive ability, shooting ability, competitiveness, basketball IQ, you know, and just being able to understand out of that what we're really looking for. You know, so that each athlete has different elements of that, that there's intrinsic parts to that, and everyone's going to have a different feel for what that means, but they're the areas that we say, all right, well, if you're going to play for the country, that you have to have at least 3 of those areas ticked off to a really competent level.
Yeah. It gives consistency too to the kid, and I think what's important is that you're evaluating things that the athlete can execute. Like, you're not saying that your point guard gets cut or gets put in the second or third team because they're a subpar offensive rebounder. Like, that's an unfair evaluation. And it's not something that goes from team to team.
And so, on that as well, like, competitiveness could mean that they're an outstanding rebounder for their position. Definitely. So it can be broken into whatever, but 100% agree that then that way everyone's on the same page, and then we can, all right, now we can have some robust discussion about, well, do they really separate themselves in that area to someone else, and it's a consistency. The other part for me is the feedback, the written feedback, the verbal feedback. Again, you've got 5 areas that you're looking at, so making sure that they understand that and can go from there.
Mm. Definitely, I think that's really important. Like, you'd cover all this off in your pre-trial meeting. I mean, you would have your head coach probably gets the, in a lot of ways, the easiest job, because their kids tend to stand out fairly quickly. Who are the best 10 kids they're looking at, or however many kids they're looking to pick? And it gets a little bit harder as you go down the list as well. And I mean, every coach will have their own philosophy or style that they want to play with or coach with. So it becomes a little bit harder. But I think as long as everyone's on the same page, and the only way you're going to get that is just a quick meeting before trials and say, hey, here's what we're looking at. Realistically, if you have a trial of 60 kids, the first or the best 10 will probably stand out fairly early. Probably the worst 10 will stand out fairly early as well. Then there's that middle ground, which is probably the hardest bit to pick out of as well, because you might have two kids that have great 1v1 offense, and then two kids that have great 1v1 defense, and yep. Now you're starting to weigh up everything else that goes with it as well.
What's the perfect number? What's the perfect number per hoop, per court? Like,
I worked on it, yeah. So for our selection camps this year, I worked on an 8-player to a hoop ratio.
Yep.
And I just found that athletes are able to get more reps. You can play 4-on-4. If you needed to do anything 3-on-3, you can definitely work with the other end of the basket, other end of the court. But 8 athletes to a hoop, it seemed to work for us this year. It allowed coaches too, when we got competitive in the full court, to rotate 3 subs instead of 5. And I felt like all athletes were able to get a fair crack at it. So 8 out of basket's kind of what we've worked at for Metro camps this year.
I think in max is 15. But if it is 15, your session plan has to fit that many. So there isn't standing around. They're not, you know, just sitting there going, what's going on? Like, I think your planning's pretty important. I know some of our centres, you've got 2 courts max and that's it. So you've got to make do. But, you know, to me, as long as you're fitting around that bracket, 8 to 15 is kind of your max point, coach per hoop. And then your session plan fits that they get lots of trial and error reps. Yeah. So that it's not, as you said, one time they get to shoot and they're living on that one make or miss, that there's multiple opportunities and time to evaluate.
That's a pretty good segue you've made there. It's almost like we've planned this, that now we start talking about sort of your session plan and what the content's going to be. Like, how are you going to evaluate these athletes during the session? I think in years gone by, we've done a whole heap of drill work and we do sort of alley drill and we sort of see what that looks like, and then we might do some shooting. But you don't really get much of a feel, I don't think, for trying to evaluate talent as well. Like, what are some of the things that you would put into your session plans? I'm really big on the competitive stuff. I could almost just watch kids play for an hour and a half and then try and pick the eyes out of that. But what are sort of the situations, I suppose, you put them into to make assessments on them?
I think Zepp and I are similar on this. Yeah. Like, go for it, Zepp. I think we're on the same page.
And it comes back to that shopping list as well. Like, if you're going to find out if you've got one-on-one basketball players, you do have to play a significant amount of something, one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, where they are in those situations. So to be able to evaluate, if that is on your shopping list, make sure the drills marry up to that. Really important. Something that I put into our selection camps here is some form of full court passing drill, because I think it is incredibly valuable in an international game. You know, we talk about kick ahead pass. Let's find out who can actually kick ahead pass. So if we do competitive things, one-on-one, two-on-two, I will try to split those up between a shooting drill in between, a full court passing drill in between, with the ultimate goal to get to some 5-on-5 full court basketball.
I guess I am a little bit different after hearing that. I've, for a long time now, believe that I can't really genuinely evaluate unless I see you competing and playing. So we actually don't do any kind of breakdown type stuff. We may show something once and then we're away. But trying to get them into competitive environment as quick as possible. Like, the fundamentals are the fundamentals, and everyone can kind of do that, in my opinion, when there's not a defensive player there. But to see them when they're getting a little bit of pressure, and that really, to me, kind of separates people from the pack. And it was interesting, you know, like, as I spoke about those trials last week, huge amount of kids, but it really was still quite easy to identify who the top-tier athletes were and who needed to go relevant to that selection criteria. And it was really what stood out was when we got to 5-on-5 gameplay. So, you know, it's just an interesting, there's no right or wrong, I don't think. And I think it depends on your numbers always, but to me, that's kind of where I've got over time in a high performance evaluation.
Yeah, Dev, and I think it's a really easy way to build it as well. I mean, you have, you know, 100 kids on 2 courts, you're obviously limited with how much 5-on-5 you can play as well. So 3-on-3 is a really great way to get the ball through hands, as well as everyone gets to touch the ball a little bit more. You can start to make assessments on them.
Can't hide.
Exactly right. You can always find out who can't defend when you're in 3-on-3. And that might just be one side of the floor. That doesn't necessarily need to be half court.
Some of the older head coaches that I've been mentored by used to talk about the Yugoslavia national team and that.
That'd be Pesic by any chance.
There's a few of them. But there's they basically went through their whole Olympic campaign right up to pre-tournament in 3-on-3. Well, they didn't really get to 5-on-5 ever, which, you know, in a selection period of time, that was quite a few number of years back now, like, I think there's something that we've learnt from that, and I think in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years from a Basketball Australia point of view, I think we're doing a much better job in camp environment of that, just getting the kids into play and evaluating in that way.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, I mean, now you start to get into your team selection, so to speak, so you've started to evaluate the talent a little bit. How much does your system or what you want to run dictate as to how you pick your team? It's one of those things where probably your first 5 or 6 kids stand out fairly quickly in terms of we have to pick those kids because they're our most talented. But now you start looking at your end of the bench or your bench players. How much does that dictate under how you want to coach compared to just how talented they are? You might have a kid that's obscenely talented that doesn't fit your system or how you like coaching. Is there an unwritten rule where you say, hey, we're not going to pick that kid because they don't fit, or is it your job as the coach to make that kid fit?
I think that sparks that the old debate of am I picking the 10 best players, am I picking players to specifically suit what I want to do? And there's a fine balance because you absolutely want the best athletes on your team, but your shopping list, your game plan, your philosophies as a basketball player, as a basketball coach, sorry, come into it now. I like picking the best athletes and then figuring out one way or the other what to do from there, considering my shopping list and philosophies and styles. But that is something that everyone needs to understand personally as a coach. Like, where do you sit with that?
I think there's a massive difference between system and style of play. So style of play, I think, is definitely a certain type of athlete that you're looking for. So if you're wanting to play in the first 8 seconds, you can't select plotters. Yep. But system, you should be always able to create strengths for whoever you select. So I think there's a really definitive difference between the two of that, and that's about you knowing and being comfortable with what you can coach. And my philosophy is you can coach anyone, you just got to figure out what actually makes that happen. Whereas you know, and especially in a club-based system, I'm sure there's layers there that here's our blueprint, you've got to know that, you've got to be able to do it. But then on top of that, most coaches, I would think, would have the freedom to then be able to create what they need for that individual athlete.
Yeah, and that's important for junior clubs, because there are some in Melbourne that do run a similar style of play and system of play from under 12s through to their senior programs. So being across that as a DOC and then as a coaching staff is critical, because you have to pick teams and athletes to suit that.
I think the one thing I've probably taken from that is you're not going to pick plotters, and it's probably a good thing that my junior career is very much over, because I don't think I'd make too many groups. I didn't make too many teams when I did play, in all honesty, so nothing's really changed a whole lot for me there at that point. But now we start getting into position. Like, is there, and this is another huge debate, I suppose, over anything, is there such thing as a 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 anymore? Have we gone away from that completely? Like, I know people are like guards, wings, bigs, and that's it, but like, where are we at now?
It's funny, like, through country, we've gone, you know, 4 guards, 4 wings, 2 bigs as a general rule, but a lot of kids fit within that guard and wing spot anyway. I definitely think there's more probably your point guards, your true centres, and then everything else is the reality of where it is. And I know from a national team perspective, that's how we looked at it, is who can lead the group on the floor, who can actually defend a monster five, and then everyone else needs to be interchangeable. So I think that's something that comes down to your club philosophy, and also then after that, your individual coaching philosophy. What are you most comfortable with? What do you feel you really need to have? And then evolve it from there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've kind of working with the terminology at the moment. Like, you've got ball handling guards, you've got athletes, and you've got posts, and you kind of sit in one of those three. And then there are some traits that can, you know, get you an extra, you know, bonus point. Like, if you can shoot the ball, that obviously now moves you up in that group. It doesn't matter where you sit in that group. But it's interesting how not only us that we evaluate talent, but the way the NBA and NBL now evaluates talent and builds out their rosters, it's very different to what it was.
Your point right there, though, to me, is the thing that we still do a really poor job of, is identifying just true shooters.
Yeah.
You know, it's the master skill in the game, but we always tend to, all right, we'll take the athlete over the kid that can just knock it down. And it's something that I look at the last two Worlds campaigns that I've been involved in, you know, in DJ Vasilovic and Dragon Elkaz, they're the ones that got us wins in big games because they could just flat out shoot it, not necessarily the athletes. So I think that's something that, you know, all the discussion we're having is really good, but then coming down to really understanding what matters to you. And to me, shooting matters, and that's where my thought process has gone.
So how do you get that in your trial then? How do you find the best shooter in your trial when you might have 50 kids on one court and you're trying to work out which kid can actually shoot at them?
So this comes back to being able to just play and figure it out, because I think we've all seen, you know, the old drills boys. You know, I was probably one of them where, you know, you can shoot uncontested shots till the cows come home.
Yeah,
but,
I couldn't do that.
But put you in a game, time and space, speed, you know, like now that really determined whether you were really a shooter or not. And, you know, Mike McHugh the other week said there's a lot of shooters here but not many hitters. And it's like, we want the hitters. We want the kids that in games can really knock down a shot. So I still believe that that's the way you'll really figure it out, is through gameplay. If you're noticing someone constantly making buckets, and to me the other part is making sure free throws are part of those games, seeing if a kid can step up and hit a free throw, because I think it's an undervalued skill. But making sure that those elements are there, you're going to figure it out.
Yeah. Oh, there was a coach I was watching coach the other day that had part of scrimmage in their trials. And every time they had a trial, if one team won, their team that won had to make the free throw to keep the win. Otherwise, it was just game on again. You just keep going. I think it was like first to four. If one team got the four first, they'd shoot it. If they missed it, game is still on. It's just live.
Yep, love it.
Yeah, it's all great that stuff as well. Does it change from under 12s to under 18s? Like, I know you guys have just gone through like your Jamboree selections for the country guys. We had some ID camps in here for the Metro kids as well. Does it change in under 12s, how you're picking kids? Like, do you look for the long-term athlete that you sit there and say, hey, you know what, might be a little bit raw at the moment, but in 3 or 4 years' time, this kid could turn into a long wing that could potentially be a few different things? Or are you picking for the here and now in under 12s as well?
To me, the shopping list doesn't change, but the actual greyness in the selection changes. So there's a lot more grey at under 12s versus the black and white at under 18s, where you either have it or you don't. Under 12s, definitely you've got to be looking at body type. You know, are they a quick learner, an adaptive learner? You know, are they comfortable? You know, do they have a little bit of swagger and a bit of confidence? Or are they, you know, are they a punk? You know, like all those sorts of things at that age where you're trying to really build long-term development plans. I think, you know, that all comes into it. But the shopping list, in my opinion, stays the same. We use the same at under 12s right through. So the key on that is 1v1 offense at under 12s means something very different to an under 18. So at under 12s, it might be that they can dribble left and right. You know, so that's 1v1 offense. They've got that ability, you know, and figure it out and get your layers from there.
Yeah. And with size at the under 12 level, like a lot of the time it's hard to project what the little ball handling point guard is going to be when he's under 18 or she is under 18. So I think to Justin's point, like, you have to be careful not to completely cease the development or projection of a particular athlete purely based on their size at under 12s, because they might end up being a legitimate ball-handling point guard who has exceptional speed and quickness by the time and decision-making by the time they're 16, 17.
Massive one for me has been the under 14 boys' leading scorer at Nationals. Is most times it ends up that kid disappears within 2 years because they were just a man-child at that age where, you know, the kid that's kind of somewhere in between ends up, you know, long-term projecting pretty good. So it's understanding that as well, though, over the years as a coach, I think. Like, I'm certain as a younger coach, I would be like, I don't care, that guy averaged 20 points a game or whatever. As time goes on, you're having longer-term projections. I think that changes. But again, at Clubland, where the result is now, sometimes that kid helps you kind of progress and win, and that's a discussion point as
well. Definitely. I think over the last couple of years, I mean, VJBL have removed zones from under 12s and under 14s too. I think there's been a little bit of hesitancy from some coaches to pick the big kids in under 12s and under 14s because there's a little bit of a, hey, I don't think they can match up on anyone now. It's more a pressing game and man-to-man principles. They want the smaller players that can actually cover the ground. Bigs are incredibly valuable to have if you've got them that can catch and finish. But I don't know that you pick kids just because they're big. There is a fine line between, is this kid really raw and I can turn them into something, or are they just a big kid Sometimes you just want the most talented kids.
I think also everyone deserves to be coached. So you've got to figure out what's the best fit for them at this point in time. So, you know, big thing I think we do too often is set people up for failure, not success. Mm-hmm. And to me, like, part of the selection process should be, where is this athlete going to have most success this year for their long-term development versus most success for me as a coach to be able to win right now. So that kind of really has to come into that equation, I think.
So is it about you or is it about the players as a coach?
Should be about the players always.
Always.
Always. With to the point about post players or bigger players at a younger age, for them to get better, they need the ball thrown to them. For their psyche, they need to feel like the ball's getting thrown to them, because in basketball, if we don't throw the ball to them in the post, they won't develop. And if they go and play football and they get told to play in the ruck, they're going to get told to follow the ball wherever it goes on that day, and they're going to get their hands on it an awful lot. So we have to kind of take that into consideration too. Like, yeah, they might turn it over a couple of times, but we do have to, you know, if they're on their team, you've got to coach them.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's a really valuable thing as well when you start looking at trials, maybe to the younger age groups. You probably stay away from set offences little bit more and just give them some basic rules. I mean, 5-out has been around forever. It's nothing revolutionary.
To me, receiver spots should be universally known by every Australian athlete coming through, because that is a big factor long-term for those athletes. But outside of that, absolutely. It should come down to what they can do and let them trial and error in a positive environment.
Yep. So what are some of the mistakes you guys have made at trials? I know the first time I ever went to one of my trials, I was coaching the 14-2 girls, and I sat there watching these kids get up and down, and I'm like, man, these are the best 5 or 6 athletes there. At no stage I was ever going to get those kids. They were never going to fall to me. And I spent the entire time watching the best kids, knowing that I had the twos, and I screwed that up royal. It's, what are some of the things that you can sort of steer coaches away from making the same error?
Do you want me to go, Zeb, or you go?
I think that's a good point. Like, make sure that you're not fixated on one or two kids. That's critical. Having multiple coaches with multiple sets of eyes on kids is really important at a selection, because at the end of the day, when we go into a room like this and talk about, you know, number 24, there has to be more than just one viewpoint on the athlete. Yeah. Like, let's build up the athlete's case to make this team, make this squad, whatever the case may be. Finding the good in every athlete's really important as well. Like, these athletes are all here because they do something really well.
Yep.
Our job, we coach everybody, our job as coaches is to be able to use that elite talent or their skill, whatever they've got, for the best of their game and then for our team. So a lot of the time we look for athletes that can do all kinds of things.
I think that, as well as evolving that skill as a coach and just being able to find something good in people. Like, I mean, how often does a coach come and tell you, oh, this kid can't do this, can't do that, can't do that? Often I'll throw at them, well, what can they do? And they look at you blank. It's like, you know, that should be the first mindset. What can that kid do?
Right.
Now, can they do enough to warrant selection? If they can't, that's okay.
Yeah.
But find what they can do. To me, the other big errors in the past was just, one, preconceived ideas on what wouldn't work. So, you know, if someone didn't have something, all right, well, they can't play for me. Like, that, to me, over time, has just been a recipe of failure, guaranteed, hands down. And I guess the other parts that, you know, really matter in selection is, like, just making it comfortable. You know, like, you know, early days, I want it to be ruthless and, you know, hard, but, like, actually, we want to see the kids at their best. So finding a way to give them a little bit of comfort. Massive thing is getting to know their actual name and call them by their actual name, not, you know, saying Michelle instead of Michael, you know, like, that can really mess with the kid's head on that day. Like, those are probably the little things that don't seem like a lot, but ultimately you're going to get a better evaluation of the kid on the day.
Because they're nervous coming in anyway. Oh, they're nervous, their parents are nervous. So if you can draw that level of comfort for both, you know, the family as they come on in, absolutely. Because, yeah, they'll be nervous anyway.
Yeah, and I think you've been hit on a really valuable one there, and the parents are nervous as well. Like, I mean, I went to bottom age under 12 trials on Sunday morning, and within about 2 minutes of doing a contested layup drill, we had two parents on the court trying to coach their kids. I mean, they're not bad people because of it, but they're just really nervous for their kids.
I think that's important as well for coaches, especially young coaches, not be afraid to converse with parents. Like, I know, you know, you always, as a younger coach, you always get your back up because you think, oh, you know, they're judging me, but The reality is, the more communication you got, the better chance you've got of everything running smoothly on that day, and just setting clear guidelines and clear framework around this is what we're going to do, this is how the day will go.
Transparency, here, really,
and
important.
Go from there, yeah.
Absolutely.
And every parent interaction isn't conflict. Like, it's really easy to think that. Yeah. Like, it's sometimes they're just genuinely nice people saying, "Hey, my kid's forgotten his drink bottle. Can I just throw it to him?" And you know, I'm just telling him it's over there on that bench. Yeah. It's those sorts of things as well. So it's just a different world when you get into trials because everyone's on edge.
I think that's also part of evaluation as well. Yeah. If the kid's looking, you know, like, there's not much separation there from mum and dad, then that's an athlete that you know you're going to have to spend time on that with. So everything, you're constantly being evaluated. We say it to our green and gold athletes all the time. You're always being evaluated. That's mum and dad too. You know, that's the reality.
That's really, really, really important that these athletes and families know that this evaluation goes longer than a three-hour camp in Shepparton or wherever
absolutely.
It is. Like, this evaluation goes January 1 through to December 31. Everything you do is towards a certain goal, and we constantly evaluate, whether it's on the floor, off the floor, and coaches in our pathway are being evaluated too, the same.
Yeah, and the other part we preach a lot is just because you don't make it doesn't mean you're not a good athlete. Just because you don't make it doesn't mean that the next person isn't going to think you're good enough. Like, selections are subjective. So
correct.
Really trying to give that framework on this is what we feel right now, this is why you've missed out, but you know, and likewise, if they make it, you know, again, that's subjective. You know, you might have the next coach who goes, "Well, no, I don't agree with that. You're not good enough at that," and being able to deal with that and handle that. So,
and you've got to be across your athletes with that as well. I think sometimes there's more value in being the 10th kid in the first team rather than the first kid in the second team, and other times it flips. It is one of those things where coaches are going to be a little bit selective about who they choose for their team, obviously. But if you're not going to play the kid, you're probably better off not picking them. Like, let them go and play.
What do you guys feel about how many kids should be in a team? Like, I've got some pretty strong views on that.
I'd always just thought it was 10.
Yeah.
But since I've been in the role in the last, you know, 6 or 7 months, I've learned that there are some associations that, depending on what the team is within the age group, gravitate towards a 9 or an 8.
Yep.
I think it's interesting.
I think your older kids can probably deal with 10 because they tend to deal with injuries a little bit more. Like, they have longer-term injuries, like 11 and 12-year-olds seem to bounce back from a rolled ankle within about 7 or 8 minutes most of the time, whereas an under-18 athlete, they roll an ankle, that can be anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 weeks.
My big thing on it is you don't get better unless you play. Like, you can train every single day. Unless you get to trial and error in a real 40-minute game, chances are you're not going to get better. So I'm massive on, you know, VC level being 9 players and then anything underneath 8 because, you know, I want the athlete to be able to play. And you know what? If there's only 7 players there 1 week, well, that's just a little bit more pressure. Like, that's my mindset with it. I definitely agree with teams going to nationals and the back-to-back to, you know, those sorts of events definitely need 10, if not 12. But, you know, the week gap in between, I think, really, you know, the only challenge on that is, well, what does practice environment look like? Need 10, et cetera, and I fully understand that. But from an absolute development mindset, I really believe that you've got to give the kids an opportunity to play and some meaningful minutes, not your 2 minutes and that's it. Like, it's got to be some meaningful minutes.
So we've got to that point where we're comfortable with our teams. They're all picked. They're all selected. We've got our 4 or 5 teams, whatever the case may be. How are you guys announcing them? Because I know from, like, I mean, I'll speak from a VJBL level, Zeb, if you want to take the state level, and Justin, take the Oz level.
Yep.
Like, I know from a VJBL level, I screwed it up one of the first years I ever did this, and we announced it online, which, you know, no issue with that. A lot of clubs do that. The issue is we announced it at sort of 10 a.m. on a school day.
Come on.
You know, technology being what it is, kids were very adept at jumping online and finding out they may have missed the first team, and that ends their world fairly quickly.
Until
as well.
Robbie had no kids at that point.
This is also true, and moving forward potentially as well, but I was also never the kid that got picked, so I wasn't really thinking about, you know, how this gets rolled out either. So it is one of those things where you need to be a little bit mindful. I know it's now become a little bit of a practice that, hey, teams will go up at 5 p.m. on a weekday, so at least that way, if the kids are checking as well, they're more likely to have family around them. So whether they've been disappointed if they're disappointed or if they're happy, they've at least got a little bit of a support network there as well.
Yep. Selection for state teams this year varied. We had some coaches make phone calls, We had some send emails, and we had some announced it on the day after selection with our state teams. Again, that was a comfort level thing with the coach. In all cases, though, feedback provided at the athlete's discretion. As soon as you want that feedback or you want to meet with the coach, then all of that is definitely available to the athletes. With NITP selection this year, we sent snail mail, a little bit of handwritten mail or hand-signed mail out to the athletes.
Some stressed kids waiting by the
way. Didn't realise email existed.
Yeah. 2017, which I just liked from my perspective, and I've still got letters that I have at or mum and dad's house from that I received as a junior athlete.
Sort of hoping that your signature's on some kids' walls at the moment with their framed or, NITP letter.
Or burnt, one of the two.
Yeah, one of the two.
He hand signed them as well. That
That's pretty impressive. He has got his arm in a cast at the moment. I'm not too sure what that was from, but it's Oz level.
So I guess ours is we've only got 16 to 18 athletes in camp, so it's really personal from start to end. We would meet as a full staff with each athlete. The process we went through with the recent selection with 17s was basically let the athlete give us feedback on how they felt they went, and we added that to their written feedback that went back to their state high performance manager and to the athlete, which is the first time we've done that, but I found it really valuable that there was a column there that they could see how they felt and mirrored that up with how we felt. Successful, non-successful, every athlete got written feedback, but it is short and sharp. It's one of the processes we use is we provide two dot points that this is how we feel you went, congrats you're in, or sorry you were unsuccessful, so that we've given them the info before they hear either of that, because the second they hear that, they're not thinking about it, and it's tough. Like it's probably the worst part and the best part about coaching is telling a kid they've made a national team and then also telling a kid that they haven't right now. But that's been the process we've used in previous campaigns, very similar, face-to-face.
So in terms of giving feedback, you sort of say two dot points, and like you discussed that kids can ask feedback as well. I've always gone similar, two dot points, but I usually put them under the headings of stop, start, keep. Things we need you to stop doing, things we need you to start doing, things you need to keep doing. And just sort of break it up a little bit for them that way as well.
I guess generally all our feedback is always written. So while verbal feedback's constant, always give them in writing form. We would always frame from a Vic Country point of view around those five key selection areas. The Oz one's very different. It's more than two dot points, but it's just a, this is basically where you're at sort of thing, really kind of detailed to... But not overkill. We don't want to tell a kid 12 things. It's 2-3 things and away you go.
Metro similar. Like, you have to have that shopping list. Like, how are these athletes being evaluated? That should be clear-cut for them. And then the feedback, not only just giving them feedback around those points, but this is how good athletes in the past have addressed this. You know, they've become better one-on-one players by doing X, or they've become better shooters by doing X. Because that's important, because you hope that the athlete takes the feedback and then starts to develop that resilient mindset to, okay, I'll take this on and get better at this, so next time I show up, I'm going to get selected.
Definitely. And it's one of those things too, where, I mean, especially at the state or the Oz level, just because they miss out on the team doesn't mean they're a bad player.
No.
You know, usually they're a very talented player, they just may not fit what's around them at the moment.
I think the other thing is every athlete deserves feedback, like every single athlete. And often one of the hard ones is when you've gone through success with an athlete and then they miss out on the next team. But that same athlete still deserves that feedback. You can't just go, I don't want to deal with that because it's hard. Every single athlete deserves feedback.
And what's their response to it as well?
Yeah.
And that's something we'll talk about in some of the later podcasts in terms of how to deal with athletes that may experience disappointment and things like that. But that's where we'll go for now. That is us for this week. Thanks to all our listeners as well. And that's probably what your parents, my parents, close loved ones. So we might have about six people listen to this. But hopefully along the way, this gains a little bit of a following and we get a little bit of interaction as well with the listeners out there. If you've got any questions or topics you'd like us to discuss, please drop us an email at basketballvictoria. All right, for the shot clock this week, we have Justin Schuller. We have 24 seconds to get as much information out of him as we can. You ready to go?
Sure.
Excellent. Let's hit it. First team you coached?
Can't remember. I'll go first championship team, North Adelaide Rockets.
Oh, suck. Favourite NBA team?
The Spurs.
Favourite NBL team?
The one that employs me.
Excellent. Favourite WNBL team?
Stanley Country, Bendigo.
Fair enough. Most used coaching phrase?
Trust the pass.
Any coaching superstitions?
Pass it before each game.
Coach you always steal from?
Stacks, always.
Favourite coaching website?
Google.
And favourite coaching podcast?
Blue Hoop and Coaching New Podcast.